Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to go into the podcast, Jules. I don't need this verification noise.
She literally has single-handedly ruined the intro for the UBP. It used to start where it was just all like, oh, let's talk about a tangential thing and I'll grab a quote from you and then it will just be like a random thing. And now it's just kind of like, this is being recorded, X for Bart.
Someday, I don't know whether the people who listen week to week are sick of us acknowledging the lack of an intro every week, but I feel like we have to do it.
Us acknowledging that there is no intro is now the new intro. It evolves. This is what good podcasts do. You never stay the same.
If you do it enough, then it becomes tradition. I'm Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Yo.
This is the Entitled Banter podcast, also known as the UBP.
UBP.
The
UBP.
UBP. UBP. UBP. Now, last night there was the Summer Games Fest. Jeff Keighley getting in there, stealing all the spotlights and all sorts of hits and views and everything else from E3. Kind of feel like he's already stole their thunder. Thunder's the word that I want. It's stole the thunder from E3. Because there was tons of stuff. There was loads of different things announced. You've got Gearbox are doing Wonderlands, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. We've got Death Stranding Director's Cut, which of all the things...
I feel like we need to dissect these like one by one. I know that this is not the podcast to do it, but can we just say the fact that there exists a director's cut of Death Stranding when the man has his own studio and had complete creative control is literally the nadir of insanity.
That was
he threw everything at the wall.
What is left behind?
Another 2-hour conversation, a 3-hour cutscene movie. Like, it's one of those things where I'm intrigued more than ever to see what he is going to put in there, because if he thought that was too crazy, too long-winded, or too up his own ass to cut out, that has got to be something we need to see.
Death Stranding was the game that his longtime collaborator, I forget the dude's name, but there's been a guy who's worked with him since he was in Konami, since the original Metal Gear Solid, who apparently was the dude that he used to bounce ideas off and stuff, very much like a phantom partner kind of thing. And Death Stranding was the game that made that guy leave, where he was just sort of like, I can't anymore. This is ridiculous. Princess Beach, mate, and everything else. And so I kind of wonder what he starts a pitch that this guy left the door on, that he's now going to go, well, I've got my way now. I can do my director's cut and I can do all this stuff. I really, really hope
that the person in question is literally just like a Tickle Me Elmo doll or something like that, where he's just like, so like, do you think that I should put in this? And it's like, Elmo says no, Elmo wants to leave.
And he's burnt it alive. Yeah. And now he's doing this. But yeah, we're getting the Death Stranding director's cut. There was Elden Ring got its gameplay. There's quite a bit to get to. But let's bring some questions in. So first question from Willie Araya, who says, do you think Kojima is hiding something else with this Metal Gear-inspired content, or is it just a homage? Keep up the good content and never keep us waiting, huh? Well, I mean, I'll throw another couple of ones in as well, because we've got quite a lot for
Death Stranding.
Yeah, for Death Stranding's
director's cut. Let's go to town on this.
It is, like you said, it's such an idea. It's such a weird Venn diagram of creativity in business. It's such a weird thing. But the footage itself opened with Norman Reedus going to a warehouse, and then the whole sequence was shot like a Metal Gear Solid cutscene, which led a lot of people to think, oh my god, is there going to be some sort of Metal Gear based thing? Because David Hayter, for as much as he fell out with Kojima and Kojima didn't ask him to come on board with Phantom Pain, Hayter has reprised Snake a couple of times since then, one of which being in Bomberman, who just popped up as Solid Snake in Bomberman. But yeah, another question from Travis Nichols, who says, Happy Friday, gents. I'm sure that the craziness of E3 will be covered, so my only question is, what the hell is up with all the Metal Gear Solid references in Death Stranding Director's Cut, considering all the connections that people were making between those games before the original release? And then Sam Drevo, who says, how much stuff do you think will be added to the Director's Cut of Death Stranding, and what sort of stuff would you like to see? And then Benroy Turner, our own Benroy Turner.
Classic.
Says, are you ready for another 100 hours with BB? Now, to bring it all a full circle, like I said, the footage shows very Metal Gear Solid adjacent thing. Sam Porter Bridges, jumps in a big old cardboard box, and it's very Metal Gear until it's not. And so
not before tipping out some oranges, mate. The oranges mean something, obviously.
Well, no, oh, I'll tell you what they mean.
The box, isn't it? The box
That's
brand.
That's the box in Metal Gear Solid 2. Which just, I hate that I know that. I hate that I've been around for this long. But yeah, I don't.
So, all right, I'm going to have to step in because I feel like Scott's about to disappear into the void. Like the problem is with you and Kojima is that you have a very love-hate relationship with the man. Oh, you love everything he does. You love the authorship that he's allowed to approach his projects with and the fact that he is literally just going out there and doing his own thing. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. That is a very important thing. Identity and a voice of that sort of like drive is very essential in the gaming industry. However, it's like he's speaking to himself inside an anabolic chamber or whatever it's called, where you like can't hear anything else other than himself.
He just
like he's getting no outside forces telling him, no, that's maybe not a good idea. So to have all of these ideas resurface in this director's cut, I'm fully intrigued. I'm fully on board because I want to see it. If we get more Solid Snake stuff, which is effectively him giving the massive middle finger to Konami and saying, look, you might, the IP is nothing without me. Mm. I can still do this in my own version and we're going to have everything like...
Well, he kind of did last night. I mean, Metal Gear was like trending again. Like, yeah.
Well, it never explicitly is Metal Gear. Like the oranges, obviously, with the box brand, the box is iconically tied to Solid Snake, but it's nothing that is from the Metal Gear Solid franchise because Konami still owns that IP. It's under their publishing rights. So he will do everything he can. We will not see Snake appear. We will probably see another guy called like Fiskin or something like that. There will be so many on the nose references to it that it will court
Solid Snake.
Solid Snake. It will be like it will court Konami's lawyers, but it will be just away enough. In fact, it may well be the only reason that this is a director's cut is because this was a legally dubious piece of content that he couldn't put in.
I wonder if what he's doing, because I mean, like, if you follow along with everything that happened with Phantom Pain, then he left that project. Yeah, they had to wrap it because they couldn't finish it on the time frame that Kojima wanted, because Konami came down and said, look, you've got to get something shipped, and his budget had gone way out of control. That was why they had to segment it into Ground Zeroes and whatever. I wonder if he had ideas that were left on the cutting room floor that he's now just going to do with Death Stranding, because gameplay plays well enough. It's close enough to the Fox Engine, it's close enough to Metal Gear 5, and I mean, I would take that like a Metal Gear themed Death Stranding add-on, but I also wonder, that game is like 40 hours long, like at its base version. Like, is there gonna be story stuff that's different? Like, it's like someone voiding their bowels and then just being like, oh, I need to go see if there's anything left, and just being like, well, it's clearly all out there, it's a bit of a mess, and I don't think we need it, but at the same time, sure.
I think that we've got to, maybe everyone's been a bit distracted by the Metal Gear symbology, as on the nose as it was, that maybe we're not asking the right questions. Maybe we should be looking at where the setting is and what Sam might be having to do in this director's cut to maybe see if he's moving the dialogue forward, because it opened up in a base that had loads of cadavers, like body bags.
Like bodies,
But I thought the whole gimmick of Death Stranding was that if you die, you explode.
Well, so time between that, but like,
okay, so but it's still,
people though,
it's still a very dangerous perspective to be in if you've got a room full of dead people that might literally explode. So it might well be at this point in time that we're looking at the group of people who are wearing the high-tech helmets and stuff like that. Maybe they're trying to weaponize these bio bombs.
They found a way to like elongate the time before bodies blow up, or maybe they found a way to change the way, like you said, that rule happens or whatever. It's very strange, it's very weird. I appreciate it. The cringe of Jeff Keighley talking to Kojima after the years of him, he's my best friend and I love you, Kojima, and him going, I love you, Jeff. And it's just this weird thing that I completely forgot was a thing until I watched another Krobycat video. But yeah, not to worry. In terms of moving on, yes, Ben Roy, we are ready for another 100 hours with BB, but it might also finish me at the same time. Next question from Carl B, brackets Eden and Pops. So big shout outs to Eden and Pops. Just a quick one, you legends. What games haven't been 100% confirmed for this new version of E3 across the weekend that you would love to see at E3? Personally, I would lose my you-know-what if we actually got to see Bioshock 4. All the best.
So basically, we're looking at games that we know are in development, but we haven't actually heard anything.
Ostensibly. Wrong. Yeah, I haven't been 100% confirmed, but you would love to see.
I mean, it would be, for me, it would just be seeing, because I'm still riding that hype train pretty hard. It's the time split stuff. Obviously, the announcement really did get me hyped up. And I
That's
feel
such
like
a
it, the fact that they announced it just a few weeks before E3, if they could capitalize on that and show some concrete footage of it moving forward, then I think that Deep Silver would get a lot of... It is Deep Silver that are publishing it, isn't it?
It's a new studio, I think, that's developing. Yeah, publishing will be Deep Silver, I think.
Yeah, which I genuinely think that Deep Silver needs a bit of a win at the moment, don't they? Because they've got Dead Island 2 that is apparently coming out at some point. Well, unless I'm getting confused with the developers and publishers.
The top of my head right now, I can't think which one belongs to them. But either way, like the Timesplitters Resurrection, that's such a shout. That's not its name, but the Resurrection of Timesplitters is such a shout. I completely forgot about that thing. Bioshock 4 is a big deal too. I feel like that needs to kind of prove its worth with Ken Levine being nowhere near it. If we're throwing stuff out that we know is in development, and I just mentioned Ken Levine, I would love to know what the hell he's been working on, because he's apparently got a whole new IP that he's been working on and a new set of game mechanics, this whole new way of telling a story that's been in the works for the last like 8 years or something. My main thing, weirdly, is actually the Nintendo Switch Pro Deluxe, Super Deluxe thing. Because that's never been 100% confirmed. Nintendo have never acknowledged it officially. All we know, in theory, is the components are being put together in warehouses, and the assumption is that, you know, it'll show off Metroid Prime and Bayonetta and everything.
Yeah.
I just want to know what the hell that system is, but it would be so Nintendo to not do it, because they're like, well, you all know now, so we're just going to wait. Nintendo, we need to delay it a week. And it's just like, just do the thing. Just do the thing that we all know you want to do. And
Actually be a game publisher. Show us some actual stuff, please.
Stop making it so we have to download apps for voice chat. It's not good. Next question from Mackenzie Young. What is a mechanic in one game that should be used by more games besides the meniscus system? Now, I had to ask around the office for this, including including you, because I thought the meniscus situation. Josh thinks that this is a misspelling and autocorrect of Nemesis, which makes a lot more sense. But I do love the idea of the meniscus system.
Because we discovered that obviously the meniscus system is related to your knees, your cartilage in your knees. So it must be games that have legs. we'll answer the question twice. Which mechanics? Because obviously games with legs, we've definitely got to go back to...
First person. You want everything in first person to make sure you've got legs. So meniscus system.
Doesn't Death Stranding have like mechanical legs you can wear?
It does actually. Yeah, it has loaders that mean you can carry more stuff. You can run faster. Yeah.
Obviously, Portal 2 has the leg braces that you wear that stop the shock impact from destroying your shins.
A very specific type of a charge jump. I want the one from, I think it's from Spider-Man 2 or in 2004 Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Where you can do the double jump, I think, but you can also hold X and do the charge boost. But you're not staying in one place while you hold X, so you can sort of fight whilst holding X, sort of like bridge the gap with your thumb. Yeah. Fight a bit and then let go and then jump off. I want that.
That's good.
I want
that's good use of legs. That is,
it's good. Top legs.
And also Octodad, because obviously that is he's technically all legs or arms, depending on how you look at it.
I feel like there's a really obvious one that I'm missing, but it's been a while. I mean, the new Sifu game's got martial arts in it. Lots of
mate. You know what? There is a game that has no legs, but is all about jumping. Jumping Flash. Do you remember that?
First
person platforming game where you play as a robot rabbit.
That's breaking my mind. I wrote about that for some reason. I had to write about that the other week because it was
bizarre.
Gaming innovations that happened earlier than you think, and Jumping Flash is the original 3D platformer that predates Mario 64 and everything. And that's a weird one that you know that you've thought of that as well. That our brains are.
I've got both that and the sequel, mate. I've got it in the bag over there.
Oh, really?
I used to play it every once in a while. It's
the bag
fun.
Of legs. In terms of the should be more games, the Nemesis system. Personally, I'm sick of the Nemesis system. I'm sick of
what? Characters. What?
Because they're always invulnerable and they wander after you, and you're trying to get a puzzle. So I've got to pull this lever, I've got to do this crank, and there's a creature that I've got to
wait. What do you mean by the Nemesis system? Define, because I think
the one that Resident Evil 2 remake set in
motion. No. I think that they're talking about the Nemesis system as in the one from Shadow of War, Shadow of Mordor.
Maybe.
A nemesis system, as in like the evolving like enemies that become your nemesis.
You're not wrong. You're not
you're talking
wrong.
About a nemesis. Yeah, I'm sick of games that just go like, you can't kill this thing. This big chunk of ham's going to turn you into a charcuterie board. Yeah, I'm not entirely happy about that.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I think the heat's definitely gotten to me. We are very warm, or I'm very warm, sitting in this room. But yeah, the nemesis system, Shadow of Mordor's nemesis system, mm-hmm. yes, should be in way more things.
What about the traversal mechanics that you get from the likes of Just Cause 3, when you can like parachute and then use the hook thing? Then, but I love games that allow you to just get to like from A to B without ever having to touch the floor, because you just go.
Actually, they do. Mackenzie Young does suggest their pick is Quantum of Solace's blend of first-person shooting and then third-person while in cover.
I
love that too. I associate mm-hmm. that more with Rainbow Six Vegas.
Vegas 2. That was an absolute jam. Like playing against the bots with a mate and just like going on like this. Like, we're just going to hide
that
here.
That was such a golden age of tactical shooters, like all the Ghost Recon stuff. I remember, I don't know if you had a friend or maybe you were this person on PS1 who was flying the flag for Rainbow Six, but I could not get on board with it before we had a right analog stick. Trying to look around with face buttons.
The earliest introduction I had to the Rainbow Six franchise was the one that came with the headset that allowed you to speak commands to your teammates on the Xbox
with
One.
SOCOM, but yeah.
Yeah, that was a brutal Barred game. That's so tough. Yeah. So, get to cover. What? Get to cover. What?
That's my experience with every single voice controlled anything. That's why it puts me off ever doing anything voice controlled, because they never get it. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of the thing that I want in every single game, because I've been playing Recore, 2014's hottest property Recore.
Nice.
And I realized that I want every single game to have an air dash. Why not? Like, just if you got a dodge button, let me dodge in midair. Every single game is better for it. The new Ratchet and Clank has it, and it's just put it in everything.
The amount of hazards you can avoid just by having that simple fixture in.
Well, especially in combat and stuff as well, you can get the hell out of places or whatever. Mackenzie Young did also do a quick little follow-up saying, do you prefer to use color grids with all the sliders or a palette with set options for customization? Personally, I hate the sliders.
Yeah, I'm not too big a fan of the sliders because I always feel like unless you're going for huge primary colors, I barely see them. So I'm just kind of like, give me the option of like luminous colors.
Oh, the secret sauce for me is like, I'll take the slider, but I need the thing where you use the analog stick to fly around the slider faster, but then let me do granular numerics with the D-pad. That is the most 1% conversation ever, but I need the D-pad can let me like zero in, because I hate that thing where you go back and forward to try and land on a specific number, because I need it to be an even number, Jules. I can't carry on with my life if it's on an odd number.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Next question from Steve Ahrens, who says, hello, legends. Well, hello yourself.
Hello.
I'm hoping for an Ocarina of Time remaster announcement at E3. Which Nintendo classic do you guys think also needs a remaster? Also, did you guys know that Marvel have the naming rights to their own Australian rules football stadium in Melbourne called Marvel Stadium? Thinking face.
I did not know that at all, but I know that Marvel is one to have some very strange relationships with companies over the years. Mm. For example, did you know, obviously, the notorious racist Hulk Hogan? it's a joke, Terry. Come on, mate. Racist. Yeah. He's basically, obviously, because he had the immortal Hulk Hogan, they had to contact Marvel and license the name off of them because of the fact it was the Incredible Hulk. Was and they got like a cut of all of the merch deal for like, or they sold for a certain amount of time. Okay. Same with the people who, you know, Gangrel, the wrestler.
Yeah, yeah, the vampire.
That was a name that was taken from a I think it was either a tabletop game or a video game, and they had to pay the makers of that licensing fee for like 5 or 10 years. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as that 5 to 10 year license was up, Gangrel was out on his ass. So
he was the guy who used to come to the ring. That was when I watched wrestling, and drink blood. And
The best theme scene, because it's just started with like, it sounded like every sort of pocket dial that you ever got in the 90s, just like.
It's kind of like, it sounds like Xbox Live in 2006. It's kind of like...
That's got me. Just a game of Halo 2, shotguns and snipers. You just...
We should at some point do the types of players that everyone's encountered, because there's always the heavy breath person, and there's always the person who's left their mic on and there's arguing with their partner in the distance.
But the person who plays like really loud music, and you just get the sort of like, please stop.
It's tradition. I mean, maybe that's why everyone abandoned Xbox Live, because there was a period where everyone was playing it, but it's been a while since those people have been around. Anyway, in terms of Nintendo stuff that needs a remaster, I just want Wind Waker HD on the Switch. Just put the Wii version, the remake version.
It's already there.
The fancy version, just put that on the Switch. I think they will, because it's the 35th anniversary of Zelda. There's already been some posters that have been seen in GameStop and stuff like that. So it seems like they're going to be putting together like a Zelda collection.
The thing is that while that is great news, we have to remember that they've just done the Skyward Sword announcements. True. Obviously, that's getting its HD version. Do you really think that they're going to pull the trigger on another one so soon after? Because they love eking this out. Like, even though it is the 35th anniversary, you've got to look at what they did for Mario. All they did was they bundled together not even the best versions of their of his games, and then they did the Battle Royale thing that went away. Like, what are they going to do with Zelda? They're going to do like, it's a 100-rupee challenge that you only got until February to play.
That would be the kind of thing that they would do. I think, because I forgot about the Skyward Sword thing. That's a really good point. I wonder if they're charging more for that because Skyward Sword flopped harder, because that game didn't get to enjoy like long-term success because it was on such a failing system. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, they could do the Skyward Sword thing they are doing, and then do the trilogy bundle of Ocarina, Wind Waker, and Twilight Princess, put them out in HD.
If it was up to me and I was in charge of it, I would give the very niche Zelda fans what they've never asked for, and that is taking all of the DS games and up-resing them and putting them into a collection that you can play on the Switch, like Spirit Tracks, Minish Cap. If they could do... Minish Cap is the deepest toke of the biggest smoke, mate. I absolutely love it, because you are just like... This game is good.
I bought a DS to play Minish Cap and played that on the way when we went to Rachel's wedding. So I just associate like lovely happy times with the married couple and everything, but also Minish Cap's very good.
Isn't it?
Would agree. But that I think they'll do some sort of bundle deal with that. I kind of wonder in regards to Ocarina if they take the 3DS version, because it has all the upscaled environments and character models, up-res that even more, put it in HD. I think we'll get something though. It seems like a massive missed opportunity if they don't do something for it, because it's
true.
It is the 35th anniversary, but also there's Donkey Kong's 35th anniversary, there's Metroid's 35th anniversary. So either it'll be everything or it'll be nothing.
It'll be nothing.
Because it's like, if they start one of them, then they've got to do the other ones. And
I tell you what, Nintendo has this like, in my mind, it's like a Snorlax. Like, it occasionally gets up and absolutely whomps you with some amazing like quality hits. And then the rest of the time, it's just kind of like, sleeping giant.
It's just sleeping the road, blocking everybody else because it won't get the hell out the way. Next question is, favorite unexpected game from the Summer Games Fest from Jay. Now, this might be a hard one depending on what you...
Not at all, mate. You already know which one I'm going to talk about.
Oh, well, you go with yours first, because mine's going to be little indie things.
Bro. Oh, everyone was around there just going, oh, Elden Ring, mate. Elden Ring's bloody great, mate. I love it. And everyone else is just going like, oh, you know, Metal Gear Solid and Death Stranded. It's me just going like, excuse me, guys, can we talk about Metal Slug Tactics, please?
Oh, I thought you were going to go with Wonderlands, because your wife was on stage for a little bit.
Listen, as much as Ashley Birch and I are destined to be together, it's not happening right now. And in that interim, I need to get on board with Metal Slug Tactics, because look at it. It's literally... It's XCOM with the, well, actually, no, it's not. It's Final Fantasy Tactics, if we're being honest. And it's got the Metal Slug graphical style and the comedy that comes with it. And I'm just like, I never knew I wanted this game.
I just, there's a nice little push for, I think we mentioned this in another UBP, but there's a nice little push for turn-based combat coming back or grid-based stuff coming back.
Yes.
Like, obviously, on the even on the Nintendo side, there's the Mario and Rabbids stuff, but you've got Yakuza embracing turn-based stuff. Mm-hmm. You've got this turn-based Metal Slug. Like, we never would have guessed that, but it's a really good fit.
Maybe we should do a list on genre mix-ups nobody saw coming, something like that. Like,
well, I feel like we did that. Did we not do that?
Oh, do you know what, mate?
We've done a lot.
You and I have worked on. When did you start working on the channel again?
Oh, well, I mean, I predate it. I was in text form from 2013. And then, then we did the original version of the YouTube channel, which is still the same channel, but the videos have all been deleted. That was in 2014 or something.
So you've been here since 2014. So I would say that you've done at least every list in existence more than once by now.
Possible.
Yeah.
Me and you definitely did that video where we argued about which was a better tactics game, XCOM, War of the Chosen, or Mario and Rabbids.
Oh,
which
I'll man. I remember.
Still stand by Mario.
I got really annoyed at that. I remember just being like, how can you tell me that a game with rabbits is better than XCOM 2's booby snakes?
That thing, I remember that doing hardly any views, but me and you were like, that's the most passion we've put into
anything. Yeah, I know, anything. Yeah. We came out of that sweating. Like, it was just like,
ah. If anyone's listening to this, go seek out that old video. It's literally just called, I think it's Mario and Rabbids versus XCOM or something. It's debating it out. But yeah, unexpected stuff. It's called Sky Children of the Light. It's the next game from Jinova Chen. Mm-hmm. The dudes that did Journey. Sorry, the next game from that game company. The creative director is Jinova Chen. That did Journey, that did Flower, that did Flow. And I just love that dude's outlook on life. I just absolutely love the way he approaches creativity. I love his thoughts on creating mature art that ages with you and you get different things out of it depending on when you come back to it. He also had a really cool quote that creativity is not talent but attitude, which I think is a hell of a conversation starter. But yeah, Sky Children of the Light's been rumored or been talked about getting a Switch release for 3 years at this point, and I was glad that finally showed up. Planet of Lana, I think it's Lana.
Yeah,
looks really lovely as well. The game that seems like a post-apocalyptic thing.
Yeah,
hanging out with your cat, just looking at different spaceships and meteors. That thing looks really sweet.
What about Weezer's Bear on a Boat, Tony Hawk's Rail Shooter?
I wish that game looked better than it did, because it's got a really cool synth soundtrack. It's got, like, I'm sure Com Trues is on it. There's a bunch of, like, known synth folk that are on the soundtrack. Weezer's on it. But the actual animations for it, it's not to dunk on them. It looks like it was made for, like, a tenner. But it just doesn't, the animations don't look very good.
It's got that Fall Guys aesthetic, hasn't it? Where it's just kind of, like, simple, polished, but not really outstanding. But maybe it'll do really well for them, because it's just, like, graphics don't hold back a game as much as people think they do.
Well, no, I don't care about graphics necessarily. It's literally the animations. Like, because they're going for, it's a Tony Hawk's adjacent. It's like a skating game, but you're kick-flipping a motorboat and you're playing as a big bear. But there's a bit where he does like a wall flip and it's just the whole model just forces itself around and it just doesn't look very smooth. So I don't know. I'm going to look at some reviews, but that's out today. Next question from Shannon Dance. Great name. What would surprise you if it was announced and dropped on Game Pass during the Xbox and Bethesda showcase? Now, this is the thing that's coming on Sunday. What would be their biggest surprise?
For me, it would be, because obviously they've had the tie-up with Bethesda. That's all gone through now. Mm. They've started stating which stuff it possibly might be exclusive. What would be absolutely outstanding is if they were able to put the Doom 2016 version onto Game Pass, because at the moment that's the one that is missing.
Right,
we've got, got the original Doom 2. I'm pretty sure, obviously, Doom Eternal's on there. Doom 64 is on there, but the Doom 2016 version isn't, and I'm not entirely sure why that is at the moment. But it would be amazing if that could come online.
That's a shout. I really, really want to see the rumors of the Halo Infinite multiplayer beta being true. Just because I feel like it would just be a cool little summer free-to-play multiplayer thing they could put out. I mean, obviously, it'd be free enough if you're on Game Pass. But the rumors were, from the end of last year, that it was going to be this Halo Infinite multiplayer was the portion of that game that was ready to go. And that Phil Spencer said they debated putting that out separately and working on the campaign for the rest of the year. And then all of it got delayed. But I could go for some Halo. It's been a long time. Like, I've got the one game I've had installed since 2014 is the Master Chief Collection on my Xbox. And I could totally go for whatever the next wave of Halo is. So I kind of hope that it's in enough of a state to be out. And you could do Xbox, PC, crossplay and stuff like that.
Definitely.
So that might be sweet. Next question from Tristan Vetter. After watching the Battlefield trailer, Battlefield 2042 trailer, and finding out it was going to be £70, but it's a multiplayer only game, do you think that EA have made it their first new console game? Should it... blah, blah, blah. Do you think EA should have made it their first new console game to go straight onto EA Play service? The £70 argument is in full effect. I guess that's the whole thing of, like, are we just going to get charged £70 regardless because that it's the new gen? That's what.
Yes, of course we are. Like, I feel like if there's if there is a chance to make £70, of course every single developer is going to charge that higher price. EA. And it knows EA knows that the Battlefield license is still incredibly strong, so they can charge that. Yeah. It's going to rile people up, but at the end of the day, they're still going to see only a small diminishing bit of sales compared to all the money that they'll be making back off of that. I am a bit gutted that they are dropping the campaign mode, but if we all go back to the now infamous Activision quote about how few people actually see shooter campaigns through to the end, then maybe this will allow the game to move forward into something that's more than what we expect first-person shooters to be.
Yeah, it's an interesting rollout because like Battlefield's never been known for its campaign, but I was like glad to see them. Like the start of Battlefield 4 still has a really cool... You know,
do you remember the World War One one that actually had the short story? Yeah, the short story campaigns. That actually was done really well, and especially like the opening where you charged forward and each person you died as was a real person that got their name read out. Like they do clever gimmicky bits like this, and I do feel like that campaign was probably one of the better ones that they'd released over the years. But would I have still got as much enjoyment out of it if it wasn't in there? Of course, because I had such a good time on the multiplayer side. I definitely was just, like, the forgotten about bit.
Yeah, I get that at some point they're just going to split the difference. Like the amount of money it must cost to make the campaign. They're just like, oh, we can just do a multiplayer. It is a bit cheeky. Well, it's full on cheeky.
£70.
Full on cheeks in the face in terms of just going £70 premium price point for a multiplayer only game when everybody else is making, even Call of Duty Warzone is free. But I mean, because I was looking on the version of Battlefield that it suggests, or it did when it first went live on the PlayStation Store, was the £110 version.
And that seems excessive.
Alex looked at it
man.
And went, what? Because it's just skins. You just get different skins and you get access to whatever DLC they're going to do in the future. The base version is £70, but still, it is kind of ridiculous.
I really, really wish that companies like EA, because they are able to enact change because they have so much more capital to throw around than most other companies, it would be great for them to actually take a positive step forward and say, this game is coming out like £30, like £20 free even, but there are going to be microtransactions, the loot boxes, the skins and stuff like that, because I think that that's effectively what this game is. It's going to be a multiplayer only experience. Yes, it's going to be amazing. Yes, the Levolution stuff is there. I would pay a small price up front, and I'd even buy expansion packs if I got more levels and stuff down the line, but just that £70 up front, it really is putting like a roadblock on what I deem to be worth £70.
And it's like the rollout last time as well. Like obviously Battlefield 5, you can say whatever you want about the way the marketing handled, but that game didn't perform as well as it could have done. No, even though the gameplay is totally solid. But
do you remember the first week of launch?
Yeah.
Jeeps, that was
just so messy. And then, you know, they followed up by going, oh, we are actually going to do the Battle Royale, but it's called like Fire Team or something. And then that sort of rolled out, but it was months later and no one's playing it. And it's just... it's Battlefield, like it should be right up there next to Call of Duty, and I feel like Call of Duty has ran away with it for the last few years. But yeah, I guess we'll see how it goes. If you're the EA's, if you're in that executive board, then you're just like, why wouldn't we charge for this? There's a lot of hype. You know, it's the return to the near future setting, etc. A final question from Brian Jackson. I'm a recovering trophy addict. I gave them up to try and finish more games and not waste my time doing pointless crap. Do either of you trophy hunt? And if you don't anymore, which game broke you off hunting trophies?
I used to do quite a lot of trophy hunting, actually. I think that the game that actually broke my spirit may have actually been, I think the last game that it was a video game that added in extra achievements with an online update that could be only completed online. It was Tomb Raider. They added in those ones which like you had to get to like level 50 or something like that in Tomb Raider, and I remember being like, oh, I really enjoyed this story, I really enjoyed the game, I went through and got 100% of the collectibles, and then they added in some DLC like that came with achievements, and I was like, now I don't have 100%. And then I started seeing it everywhere. It was like the same with like Gears of War 3. I knew I would never get like seriously 3.0.
Oh, that, God, yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, well, this is kind of killing my buzz for the whole sort of trying to 100% games. And I mean, even when I did 100% the games, like I completed This War of Mine the Ratchet and Clank movie video game tie-in and For Honor. I got them all 100%. And then I was like, cool, I've done it, but
I think there's an art to doing a really good set of 100% achievements or 100% the platinum trophies and stuff, where I think you should get the majority of trophies first time through if you're just experiencing whatever the core through line of that game is, and then they should encourage different play styles. If it's an RPG, encourage different class builds. If it's first person shooting, maybe encourage different trick shots and stuff like that. Maybe get four dudes with one headshot or things like that.
Yeah,
I think there's ways to do it where it's really fun to mop up trophies. I never used to do it. I always viewed it as just time wasting. The thing that put me off was Assassin's Creed's flags in the first one.
Yeah.
The first Assassin's Creed, because that was also kind of close to when achievements really took off on the 360. But the PS5, because trophies are built into the UI, whenever you hit the home button and it shows you like, hey, by the way, you're 40% close to getting this.
Yeah.
I've started getting them. So I've got way more platinums now than ever. I mean, I say way more. I've got like 5 compared to the 0 I had before. But I think it's just a case of knowing when a game is wasting your time, and if it's something like the Gears one where it's like, hey, go do 5,000 matches or something.
Yeah.
I'm never gonna do that. Or the only one that stopped me having the current Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart platinum is that they want you to find 8 bears, little teddy bears, around. They're just anywhere in the map. They don't ping on the radar, they don't ping anywhere. You've just got to find them. And I'm just like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get a walkthrough and I'll go and find it. I'm not going to go and, you know, comb the... It's not a point-and-click game or Alien Noir or anything. But yeah, I think... I'd like to trophy hunt, but I tend to come up against a brick wall most of the time because there's always something there where I'm like, this is going to take the rest of the day to do this, and it's clearly not worth the time. But yeah.
I tell you what I absolutely hate, and it needs to be in its own sort of like level of gaming hell. It's achievements that that are story related that don't pop depending on difficulty settings. So for example, it says complete the game on the hardest difficulty setting. You do that, but it doesn't unlock the previous two.
They need to stack.
That's bad. That's bad juju right there.
Yeah, every single difficulty thing needs to stack. You should be at the top level thing and have everything trigger. So yes, for now though, this has been the Untitled Partner Podcast. Thanks to everybody for sending in all their questions. We will know this time next week what the hell E3's rollout's been. And we can talk about whatever the hell happens between now and I think Tuesday is the last conference. That's when Nintendo is. Maybe we'll have a new Nintendo by then, Jules. Maybe. You never know. But yeah, once again, we'll ask on Thursday for everyone's thoughts and stuff going forward. For now though, this has been the UPP.
UPP.
Ivan Scott Telford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll catch you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.